And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Families of four murdered Idaho college students say accused killer Brian Koberger is ready to plead guilty. CBS's Jonathan Vigliotti.
In a letter sent to those victims' families, Koberger accepted a plea deal that would keep him in prison for the rest of his life without the possibility of an appeal or parole.
Officials in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, say Wes Rowley had been living in his car when he set a brush fire to lure firefighters to Canfield Mountain, where he shot and killed two battalion chiefs, his former roommate, T.J. Franks.
I can't believe what he did. I mean, that is an absolutely disgusting thing to do.
Senators held an all-night voterama on amendments to President Trump's massive budget bill, and they're still at it. Republican Lindsey Graham.
Stick with the bill we wrote. You're going to be happy to reduce the deficit and make sure people's taxes don't go up.
Elon Musk is vowing to fund primary challenges to GOP lawmakers who do vote to pass it. CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. Wisconsin is closing in on a new bipartisan state budget. Governor Tony Evers announced a tentative deal this morning. The agreement includes $330 million for child care, including money directly to providers as the pandemic-era Child Care Counts program winds down. Add $1.4 billion in new funding for K-12 schools. Despite a rumored cut, the Universities of Wisconsin, or UW system, would get $256 million under the deal, plus $840 million for campus building projects. The governor called it the largest boost to the state university system in nearly 20 years. It also includes $1.3 billion in income tax cuts, mostly for the middle class. About 1.6 million would see an average cut of $180 per year, which is popular. A recent Marquette poll found 65% of voters want at least half of the state's $4 billion surplus used for tax cuts. The legislature's budget committee meets at 9 a.m. today. The state legislature is expected to vote on the package tomorrow. After that, Evers has 10 business days to act on the plan. A law intended to help students read only received part of its intended funding from state legislators. Jimmy Cuska has more.
Republican legislators on the state's Joint Finance Committee released only part of the funds allocated for 2023 Act 20, a law that mandates phonics-based instruction to address reading literacy in schools across Wisconsin. The law called for $50 million in funding, but only $9 million was released. The money will be used to hire over five dozen literacy coaches at schools with the lowest reading scores. The remaining $41 million is now returned to the state's general fund.
You can find more local news and sign up for our newsletter at WFHR.com. I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI News.
Lopez leaves Milwaukee.
Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports, basketball. After 7 years with the Milwaukee Bucks, center Brooke Lopez is leaving the team for L.A. Lopez agreeing to a 2-year contract with the Los Angeles Clippers worth $18 million. Now, the Bucks have come to terms with three other players, Gary Trent Jr., Kevin Porter, and Taurean Prince. So what's been the difference this offseason for Giannis Antetokounmpo? Bucks reporter Jim Ozarski with the Journal Sentinel.
I think the main difference is this team went from a 58-win team in 2023, top seed in the East, best team in basketball, to a team that had to win 8 straight games and Detroit had the founder to not be the 6th seed. And so what does that mean? They're not rebuilding. They're not tanking. But in Giannis's view, that's not contending. When we had our season ending in that locker room, those guys believe they can win a title.
Baseball, it's the Brewers and the Mets tonight in New York with Sports on Mike Clemens.
As Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
We could see a little fog hanging around for a while this morning. Overall, though, sunny today and pleasant. We'll get to 81 for a high, wind northwest at 5 to 15. Clear tonight, we'll drop to around 61 for a low. Tomorrow, sunny with a slight chance of late-day thunderstorms and a high right around 83. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Current temp 62.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Madam Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway from the fabulous city of Madison.
A lot of people say, I don't like politics. It's all dirty and angry and blah, blah, blah. It's really about caring about your community, finding a way to like bring it back to people talking to each other about what is important in our place and how do we take care of each other and use the levers of government to do that. That's really what it's about.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m. The Todd Albaugh Show.
The Joint Finance Committee was leaked that they intend to cut $87 million from the UW system budget. And so we put this out on our socials last night, and today the Joint Finance Committee decided to pull that from the agenda. Because apparently, from what I'm told, Republican legislators got a lot of calls. When the truth is disseminated and people react, results can happen.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local civic media radio station, and on the app, Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Sturgeon Spirits Distillery founder Carl Lowenstein into the studio. And the 4th of July is fast approaching, so we talk fireworks. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8. You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
Across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, good morning. It is 8:06. Nice to have you here up north on this Tuesday morning, first day of July 2025. Parker Olson's over in Madison Studio A2. Chad Holmes standing by in Wausau. Coming up this hour, we will talk to Dan Schaefer, political editor for Civic Media and founder of the Recombobulation Area, all about the budget deal agreed to late yesterday by Governor Tony Evers and legislative Republicans. We'll look at who got what they wanted, who got half a loaf, who got so much less than half a loaf they're not going to want to support this thing. Will it pass when all is said and done? All of that with Dan Schaefer. Those of you hanging around till 8:50, we will be talking to State Senator Jeff Smith of Eau Claire for his reaction on the budget deal as well. So stick around for all of that. Brittany Merlot is off today. Be listening throughout the course of the day for your local weather updates on your favorite civic media station. Coming up later across the Civic Media Radio Network, Matt and Air on Air is next from 9 to 11. I will be joining Jane Matt and Air and Greg Bach coming up at 9:30 this morning. Then there's Todd Albaugh from 2 to 4, Maggie Dawn from 4 to 6. Former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel will be the guest co-host, and I suspect they'll be talking about the U.S. Supreme Court and the flood of recent decisions at the end of the Supreme Court's term. And then on Nightlight with Pete Schwabba from 6 to 8 this evening, coming up at 6:30 tonight, Pete will be talking to Sturgeon Spirits Distillery founder Carl Lowenstein. So all that across the Civic Media Radio Network. Reminder, sign up for our newsletters, upnorthnewswi.com, including today's episode, all about cherry picking season. Information on what to know, where to go, and how to enjoy the tart kinds of cherries that grow well in Wisconsin Springs. Again, sign up at upnorthnewswi.com. 8:08 right now, let's check in with Chad Holmes from 98.9 WXCO, and of course Parker Olson standing by in Madison as well. Either one of you into either cherry picking, strawberries, any of the other apples? You do any of the pick your own stuff?
I did
apple picking last year visiting a daughter in Michigan, and some of these apple orchards, I mean, they clearly have become like recreation areas. They know, bring the whole family, there's all this stuff for the kids to do, there was like food trucks and things like that, so some of them have figured out to turn it into a real business, whereas the maybe two times that I went berry picking as a kid, I mean, you were a farm worker. That was it. You're all scratched up and dirty at the end of it, and you go, was this really worth it? I don't know. But it's a different thing now and much more enjoyable, yeah. And you can read about it on the website. All right. Having established that you're not men of the land when it comes to picking and growing fruit like that. Let's turn instead to that state budget deal, Chad, which I know we're only just now starting to find out about. But the very fact that there was a deal that was worked out, I have to say I'm a little bit surprised. And I don't know, maybe this is as close to a win-win as they all thought that they could get. And that's not a bad thing.
No, and I've been listening to you. I've been looking at the releases coming out as well this morning. And I was saying in the last hour during our local segments about this is a little different than what we're seeing right now in Washington, because we do have Tony Evers. And I think that without having the governor, then this would have been a disaster of a budget. I think it's fairly obvious what the Republicans were hoping to accomplish here. But again, it just shows how vitally important it is to have at least one of the seats at this table being filled by somebody from the other party other than the Republicans. Because comparing what happened in Madison and what's continuing to happen in Madison to what is going on right now in Washington, D.C., it's only a question of how bad it's going to be in Washington. Like you said earlier, it's like I thought it was a great line. You said, well, you know, you got Ron Johnson here trying to decide how many orphanages you're going to close down. I mean, I just thought that was a perfect way of putting it, because the discussions in Washington aren't about, you know, trying to moderate it. It's trying to make it even worse. But
right.
And one issue that I kind of discussed as well that is concerning, and I think you probably know it as well as anyone because you've dealt with state budgets, is, you know, the good aspects of having, you know, the universities of Wisconsin getting the bump and having some child care money being put in and the special education and the K-12 and all that stuff. And then, of course, the $1.3 billion in tax cuts, $180 average, as you mentioned, to most of the folks. Let's, for argument's sake, say in a couple of years that the economy slows down because of all the goofiness that is being put down the line in Washington, or for whatever reason, because there's cycles. The first thing that they're going to look at is not eliminating that $180 average tax cut for people. It's about, oh, we got to cut education. We have to cut child care funding. We have to cut here. Because now, the next time you come back, if you say, hey, we want to go back to the levels that we had before because we have a hole in the budget, no, that's a massive tax increase.
Yeah,
so, right? I mean, that's the language of it. Yeah. That's the thing that concerns me, that, hey, things are pretty good, you know, in terms of, because like you said, you had some major problems, you know, putting together a budget because it was all about where do we cut? Where do we cut? Here is about where do we put the money? We spread it around a little bit. It's not going to be this way forever. And it's like in the future, I you know where the first things are going to look for. Cut, cut, cut.
That's right. And one of them that we have not discussed at all, and Dan Hagen told me about it when we were talking last hour off air from Newswatch 12 in Rhinelander, would be Pell Grants. And the mega bill that came out of the House would cut help to a program that provides financial assistance in the form of Pell Grants for college to 6 million low and middle income students. And so they want to, here's that word, tighten eligibility rules. And it's all, you know, talking about, you know, cutting waste, fraud, and abuse. No, you're just making it that much tougher to have people from, you know, poorer families go to college. Jay Rothman of the Universities of Wisconsin is quoted in Politico as saying that the 13 campuses here have roughly 31,600 Pell Grant recipients. And I know that because I was one back in the day. The House bill would require students to increase their course load from 24 credit hours a year to 30 to be eligible for the maximum amount of the grant. And as Dan Hagen was telling me, he's hearing from a lot of people who, they're not full-time students, but, you know, they're doing the right thing, trying to further their education. But if the Republicans tighten the rules, they're not going to further their education and they're not going to get the better paying jobs. And again, you've got Republicans all the time love about fighting red tape. They sure love tying red tape around people, especially if you're in a lower tax bracket.
You know, one thing that I was actually thinking about when you talk about, again, that when you hear about, where we're just trying to, you know, tighten up in terms of taking away that fraud and abuse and all that. One thing that I think we can agree on that we have seen over the last 6 months is the fact that the folks that talk constantly about all this waste, fraud, and abuse within the system, whether the federal level, the state level, the local level, they're blowing smoke. I think that one thing we have found, if there was massive waste, fraud, and abuse, they would have been talking about it at the top of the mountain. I think that's actually a positive that this system is not. I mean, we always make the caveat. Hey, well, we're not saying all of it, but boy, it is a minuscule amount within our budget, and I think people should be proud of the fact that in a lot of ways it shows that the government does work.
Here's the thing about illustrating how empty that phrase is. State Senator Chris Kapinga put out a social media post yesterday saying in so many words that he'd be okay if it took months for the state budget to work itself out because he said there's all this waste and fraud. And somebody before me rightly pointed this out. He was first elected to the legislature in 2010. He's been there 14 years. If he cannot explicitly tell you where this alleged waste, fraud, and abuse is, then he's blowing smoke. He's just you know, using it as a talking point. If you're 14 years into your term, you're still saying, well, there's fraud out there. We just got to find it. You must not be very good at your job.
Let me ask you real fast, because you obviously were in that job.
Yeah.
And obviously that you would look at all these issues that come up in front of you and you take a look at, you know, budget issues and the like. I guess for those of us who have not been there, what did you find? I mean, in terms of how, I mean, is there something there, or is this completely just politics?
Yeah, I'll tell you this. Remember that my first or second budget was just as the Great Recession was getting started. We were facing a $3 to $6 billion shortfall. And I did express some displeasure in the Democratic caucus saying, hey, guys, we're looking to, it must have been the first budget because the Great Recession hadn't hit yet. And I was saying, guys, we're increasing funding in everything, which, again, makes sense, inflation and all that stuff. But I said, I feel bad that I feel like we should be identifying something here that should not get as much of an increase or maybe even a cut because something's not working right. I didn't specifically say waste, fraud, and abuse, but I was thinking more like inefficiencies. And they said, well, there's good luck because we've tightened budget so much over the, you know, since the Tommy Thompson era, you know, that is, it's a great talking point, but it's not really there. But I do have this breaking point on the federal budget from overnight. In a rare moment of bipartisanship, senators in Washington have voted unanimously to end unemployment benefits for jobless individuals who were making $1 million or more a year before they were fired. So in other words, people making $1 million or more who were fired were getting unemployment benefits until this vote overnight. So again, much like the Chris Kapinga thing, how was that still a thing? If you're in office and you can't identify these things, you're doing your job wrong, man.
Oh, you're exactly right. I mean, there is a little bit of low-hanging fruit. But again, back to the point, I think you kind of underlined it. And especially here in the state of Wisconsin, you said it, Tommy Thompson probably tightened it up completely. And then any of that blood in the turnip was completely gone through the Walker era. I mean, this idea that there's all this waste, fraud, and abuse coming after that, then blame your buddy Scott Walker because he was in charge with his Republican buddies for all those years. So, again, I think that I hope people realize that, boy, I mean, it can be unwieldy and gangly, but for the most part, our system is very efficient because, frankly, again, goes to the basic tenet of democracy. If you have good people in enough positions, you're going to be able to do some good things. And I do think that all this pounding on bad government is it's very difficult to fight back against.
It has been that way, prior to Ronald Reagan, but he really turned it into a brand of bashing government that all government is bad. And you're a bad guy or an elite liberal if you say, no, the government is good if you have good people, service-minded people in charge of it. And what I've turned it into instead is the saying I've said a million times, those who hate government most should be trusted least to run it competently. They are not interested in that at all. Chad
real
Holmes
fast,
follows.
Real fast,
yep.
Were you talking to Dan Schaefer later? I saw him at the Brewer game on Friday night. What a great guy. I tell you.
Of course, he's a great guy. Of course.
He came by just to say hello to me, and it was really nice. So
I will ask him all about that in 15 minutes right after a local update. Thank you, Chad. All right. So, like I said, Dan Schaefer, in about 15 minutes, a local update is next for some of you here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
The Starbucks Summer Berry Refresher is officially back. Bold notes of raspberry, blueberry, and blackberry shaken with ice and poured over raspberry-flavored pearls. Try it with lemonade or coconut milk. Available for a limited time. Your Summer Berry Refresher is ready at Starbucks.
Brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Progressive can help you protect your home, auto, boat, motorcycle, ATV, and RV, and more. And if something wasn't mentioned that you had in mind, find out if it can be covered at Progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE, because it probably can be.
This fall, there's only one place to be, Camp Randall Stadium. Wisconsin football returns with can't-miss matchups, including Maryland, Iowa, Washington, and more. From the first touchdown to jump around and the celebration of the fifth quarter. Experience the traditions and unforgettable memories that make Wisconsin football so special. Single-game tickets are now on sale. Lock in your spot today by visiting uwbadgers.com or call 1-800-GO-BADGERS. Wisconsin football game day starts here. We'll see you at Camp Randall.
Crockett Septic provides professional septic system pumping, inspections, and portable sanitation rentals. Trust the experts and keep your system running smoothly. Call Crockett Septic today, 715-712-3456, or visit CrockettSeptic.com.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
The Trump administration arresting and deporting these supposed gang members without giving them due process is one of the steps to becoming an authoritarian government.
Dale, thank you so much for the call. And again, I second all of that. Bring them all back and afford them the due process that's a part of our nation, a part of this law, and a part of our tradition in administering justice.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
It's National Handshake Day, but I find the idea that you just meet someone and you're holding a body part of theirs kind of odd. Hello, stranger. I'd like to squeeze your hand. Let's have an intimate act here. I have no idea where it's been or how you choose to use your hand in your spare time, but I'd like to hold it for a while. Unless it's a friend. Look, I don't know why we have to touch each other when we barely know each other.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. And now for something local from WFHR and WIRI Studios.
We kick things off the way we like to on a Monday in the 10 o'clock hour.
Tell me something good.
Ooh, good morning and welcome to the Kitchen's Open on WFHR. Now that I know that you can hear me.
Yes.
Welcome to the Kitchen's Open on WFHR. With all the rain, nature is bursting with color. The grass is getting greener, flowers are blooming, and our food is vibrant.
Somehow, I don't think that's all from the rain.
You're not wrong. For generations, much of the food that we consume has been altered to make it look more appealing. Food dyes were introduced because we tend to eat with our eyes first.
It actually goes back thousands of years. Ancient Egyptians were known for using additives to color their hair and for cosmetics.
Not only that, according to the Food and Drug Administration website, naturally occurring color additives from vegetables and mineral sources were used to color foods, drugs, and cosmetics in ancient times. Paprika, turmeric, saffron, iron and lead oxides, and copper sulfate are some examples. Wine was artificially colored beginning in at least 300 BC.
Wow. What we use for coloring and what colorings are added to a product makes a huge difference.
That's right. It's fascinating to look into the history of how food dyes have changed throughout the years, just in our country. The FDA's website shares in 1856, William Henry Perkin discovered the first synthetic organic dye called mauve. Discoveries of similar dyes soon followed, and they quickly became used to color foods, drugs, and cosmetics. Because these dyes were first produced from byproducts of coal processing, they were known as coal tar colors. Mm. Federal oversight of color additives began in the 1880s. The assessment of color-imparting ingredients in foods was among the first public initiatives undertaken by the U.S. when in 1881, the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Bureau of Chemistry began to research on the use of colors in food. Butter and cheese were the first foods for which the federal government authorized the use of artificial coloring. So when you buy butter, it's actually more yellow in the store than if you were to get it fresh from the farm.
Right, that's correct. Right. Yeah.
By 1900, many foods, drugs, and cosmetics available in the U.S. were artificially colored. However, not all of the coloring agents were harmless, and some were being used to hide inferior or defective foods. Mm. A careful assessment of the chemicals used for coloring foods at the time found many blatantly poisonous materials, such as lead, arsenic, and mercury being added.
Yikes.
In many cases, the toxicities of the starting materials for synthesizing color agents were well known and could be toxins, irritants, sensitizers, or carcinogens. In 1906, Congress passed the first Food and Drug Act, which prohibited the use of poisonous or deleterious colors in confectionery and the coloring or staining of food to conceal damage or inferiority. In the 1920s and 30s, it became clear that the Food and Drug Act of 1906 did not go far enough to protect the public health from misbranded, adulterated, and even toxic products, including an eyelash dye that blinded some women.
Jeez.
The Food and Drug and Cosmetic Act of 1938 further increased government oversight of food and drugs and, for the first time, passed legislation for the regulation of cosmetics and medical devices.
It's been going on for a long time.
Yeah.
It has. Wow, that's really remarkable.
I think sometimes we forget we're in a time and age where, as people, sometimes we're able to, kind of figure these things out. Or, hey, this product is hurting people, or this product isn't safe, or whatever. And even after it's been okayed. And I'm thinking of things like darts and some of the games and some cosmetic things that we heard when we were all in school and stuff like that. But it doesn't happen nearly as much as it did back in the day before we had these organizations, right. Before we had these government bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, I think it's a nice reminder every once in a while that why we have these government bodies.
Right.
It's
why we have these laws, they were created for a reason.
How many people out there knew there was a Bureau of Chemistry?
Yeah, right.
You know,
and it's been around forever. Yeah.
Right. Yes.
This is the 1800s.
For 100 years. Yeah. So, and what I found fascinating is who had the bright idea to say, oh, this byproduct of coal is something we should eat and put in our food because it makes it more colorful.
I think the same thing in the recent trend of charcoal toothpaste and some of that. When that first started, I'm like, get out of here. What? Right. What are you talking about?
Well, at least that you spit back out.
Yeah. Right,
or
right.
you just put on your face and you wash off.
Right.
You don't ingest it.
Right.
And that's where the issue came. Like, if you go back to the ancient times, they were using natural herbs and spices to add coloring.
Right.
Not artificial things that might not be good for our bodies.
Or even natural things that weren't good for our body.
Right.
Because there's a lot of those, too.
This is true.
And notice that the difference of those things, profit.
Yes,
how
absolutely.
Much that changed the all of this.
What can save me money, right?
Yeah. Well, and it didn't stop back in the 1930s. The FDA's website goes on to share in the fall of 1950, many children became ill from eating an orange Halloween candy containing 1-2% FD&C Orange Number 1, a color additive approved for use in food. That same year, U.S. House Representative James DeLancey began holding hearings on the possible carcinogenicity, say that word five times fast,
right.
of pesticide residues and food additives. These events prompted FDA to reevaluate all of the listed color additives. In the next few years, FDA found that several caused serious adverse effects and proceeded to terminate their listings. During that time, it also became clear that coal was no longer the primary raw material source for the manufacturers of color additives.
I almost guarantee that orange candy was candy corn.
Yeah.
I'll bet you anything it was candy corn.
And I will guarantee if I was alive at the time, I would have been one of those kids that got sick. I would have eaten that candy.
Yeah, me too. And the fact that they now have moved even away from coal, which is a natural substance, into something even more synthetic, is not a good thing.
Right.
So the color additive amendments of 1960 defined the words color additive and required that only color additives except Kartol hair dyes be listed as suitable and safe for a given use, could be used in foods, drugs, cosmetics, and medical devices. The 1960 amendments prescribe the factors that FDA must consider in determining whether a proposed use of a color additive is safe, as well as the specific conditions for safe.
You were listening to the Rapids Report, sponsored by Crockett Septic. To hear the full interview, visit WFHR.com, the Civic Media app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Locally grown radio, WFHR. As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. Fireworks cause thousands of injuries each year. Lisa Hale has more.
Safe, sane, sober. Three words to keep in mind when using fireworks at home. Most fire departments will recommend leaving the fireworks to the professionals, but with Independence Day celebrations, there are bound to be some people using fireworks at home. Green Bay Metro Fire Captain Nick Craig said fireworks cause thousands of children to end up in the emergency room every year.
The biggest thing is the amount of injuries. We're looking at over 10,000 injuries caused by consumer fireworks every year. And the ones that are legal for consumers to buy are actually causing the majority of those injuries.
Sparklers are prime examples of that.
They burn at over 1,200 degrees. That's super hot. Obviously, the end of the metal rod on the sparkler is red hot when it's done burning. Sparklers account for 29% of fireworks injuries for children under the age of 5.
For Civic Media, I'm Lisa Hale.
If you plan on hitting the road tomorrow, you won't be alone. Stuart J. Waddles has the story.
AAA says the busiest travel time of the Independence Day weekend is tomorrow, technically noon to 9 tomorrow. The other busy times are Thursday afternoon and again Sunday afternoon. About 1.5 million people in the state will be hitting the road for the holiday, with most construction paused, but some projects will still be in progress. The DOT urges drivers to buckle up, slow down, and check the 511 website for real-time updates.
On Monday, the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources announced that a sharp-tailed grouse hunt will be held for the first time since 2018. The hunting season will be held from October 18th to November 9th. Interested hunters can apply for entry into a limited drawing lottery until August 1st. More info can be found on the DNR's website. I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI News.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Apple Films F1 is definitely a hit, but will it be a financial success? Sounds like a strange question, but prognosticators are curious. The film opened number one with a $57 million domestic haul and has brought in $145 million worldwide. The Brad Pitt-Jerry Bruckheimer effort received excellent reviews, but still landed a little short of expectations. How to Train Your Dragon came in second place with just under $20 million and a less than 50% drop-off in week three, giving it a domestic total of just over $200 million. Disney Pixar's Elio, although a bit of a disappointment, still came in third place with just over $10 million at the gate. Megan 2.0 underperformed as well, earning much less than the first chapter of the film, coming in at about $10 million domestically. Rounding out the top five was 28 Years Later, which came in just under $10 million in its second week of release. Fasten your seatbelts, though, moviegoers. A dinosaur invasion is happening tomorrow. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
We could see a little fog hanging around for a while this morning. Overall, though, sunny today and pleasant. We'll get to 81 for a high, wind northwest at 5 to 15. Clear tonight, we'll drop to around 61 for a low. Tomorrow, sunny with a slight chance of late-day thunderstorms and a high right around 83. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 64.
Can I sit in the front seat just this one time? Please, please, please.
No, not yet.
But why?
Because I love you, and you're just not ready yet. Now, get in the back so I can get you in your car seat, please.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at NHTSA.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Indy Duttagupta, he is with the Center for Law and Social Policy.
The Trump administration's agenda is reducing economic growth. The programs that they're proposing cutting, like Medicaid and SNAP, especially for kids, actually more than pay for themselves. So we are really looking at a tough long-term economic outlook entirely created by the current policymakers.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m. Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We'll continue to monitor the budget process both in D.C. and Madison. And what's worse for the holidays, ketchup or mustard? Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
Let's get right into it from the recombobulation area, one Dan Schaefer, because, well, Dan, this is what we train for. This is why we lift all those weights. Dan Hagen is out there right now roller skiing in the hot morning of July 1st because he wants to be ready for the Birkebeiner. And we do what we do all year long so we can be ready for days like this where there's all the details of a state budget agreement, even as Congress is going through the chaos of trying to pass their own federal budget. You know, sleep is for weenies, Dan Schaefer. Here we are, ready for a day like today. How are you?
I'm doing well. A little discombobulated this morning, but we're piecing things back together, and always wonderful to join you here on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Always nice to have you here as well. So so we got the first word at 5 a.m. from the governor's office in a press release. The Associated Press and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel had plenty of details on the budget bill as well. We've been reading through them throughout the past 2.5 hours here. So before we go back into the details, for the time that you've had to look at it, what's your own 30,000-foot view of what they have created here? And will it be a case of good enough, or will it be a case of perfect is the enemy of the very good?
Well, you're right. There's a lot of information to parse here from Governor Evers' release this morning, talking about the deals of this bipartisan agreement. And I think one of my big takeaways from this is that I think they are going to require Democratic votes in the state Senate to pass the budget for the first time in, I don't know, more than 15 years now, right? And so... with that, with, as I reported last week in Civic Media, with State Senate Minority Leader Dianne Heselbein being brought into negotiations, I think that changed the dynamic of the deal being struck in some pretty significant ways. We're seeing, you know, increases for special education reimbursement. We're seeing increases to the UW system, a number of other areas that are being addressed in the budget. And I don't know how much of that would have happened had they not reached a certain level of impasse, and that the Republicans needed some Democratic votes in order to pass the budget in the state Senate. And as we're seeing some of the initial reaction this morning, State Senator Jody Habersh-Sinikin, who represents northern Milwaukee County and a number of communities on the North Shore there, said this budget is not perfect, but it reflects both bipartisanship and progress, and I'm proud to see it move forward. And then I'm continuing to quote the release here. What we are seeing play out in this budget is the consequence of Wisconsin's new fairer maps, legislators working together to find compromise and make meaningful progress for the people of Wisconsin. So I do think that is one of the big takeaways here, is that the smaller Republican margins in the state Senate that were achieved in part through the fair maps, in part through a number of tough electoral victories won last fall by people like Jody Habersh-Sinikin, who won in a really close race, a number of other state senators, Jamie Wall, Chris Alfheim, and go down the list there to kind of shrink the gap and make this a bill that had input from Senate Democrats, from Tony Evers, and then from legislative Republican leadership as well, and Robin Voss and Devin Lemahieu. So we'll still, I'm sure there will be plenty of questions, there always are, on anything this big. But I think one of my initial big takeaways is that fair maps, tough elections, leading to a bipartisan compromise in the state Senate. And I think that's a pretty big deal.
Fair maps gets you a fair budget. Not a great budget for anybody, but you get closer to the win-win. Here's the other example of a win-win. Usually I talk about it in terms of dollars and cents, but when you get to the raw politics, you get to marginalize some of your extremists, and you get to insulate some of your most vulnerable members. And here's what I mean. State Senator Chris Kapinga yesterday put out a social media post saying he'd be happy if it took months. He said, we got to get this right. He said, if it takes months, we're going to get it right. So it was clear that he and one or two other senators were not coming along on this. And so hence you need the Democratic votes. By doing it this way, you not only get a bipartisan vote on the budget, but you're actually going to get a couple of more Republicans, I think, who will vote no in order to say, yeah, that's it just wasn't good enough for me. And also, you'll get maybe a couple of Democrats in very competitive seats who, as they look at the lay of the land in their district, are going to want to go back and say, yeah, I did not vote for this because it, you know, spends too much or does or wasn't spending enough, depending on the district they're in. So I think you get a bipartisan vote. And I think you've got people at both ends of the left-right spectrum who now have the freedom to say no without looking like they're the obstacle to getting a deal done.
I think you're absolutely right about that. And I think there's some evidence of that as well. I just saw a statement come across the Twitter feed from State Senator Chris Larson of Milwaukee. He said, and I quote, Governor Evers and Republican leadership announced the tentative budget agreement today. There are some good things in it. And Wisconsin State Senator Dianne Hesselbein played a key role in making it better when it otherwise better than it otherwise would have been. However, the final product falls far short of what our neighbors need and, frankly, what they have demanded since the beginning of this process. So perhaps there's one example of a Democratic senator who might not be all the way there just yet. On this budget deal. And I think you're right. There is some raw politics at play here. But I think, again, the big picture of this is that we do have a budget agreement, and there seems to be support, at least some levels of support, and I guess some levels of opposition as well, from both sides of the aisle.
I don't think I could be happier right now, my inner nerd, that I make a political guess on something and I get affirmation of it from somebody's social media feed in the immediate aftermath of making that comment. So sometimes you shoot for the basket and the ball actually goes in. And
Nostradamus Kreitlo here, yeah. Nostra Kreitlo something. I don't
know. Something along those lines. Now, I want to come back to something that Corrine Hendrickson told us in the last hour, and she has been fighting hard for child care counts. And what is going to result from this budget deal is not child care counts, but it is going to be state funding, and not insignificant state funding, but not as much as people were hoping for, into child care, not only provider payments, but also helping parents with lower incomes to afford child care. And to sum up her view, it was at first she was happy to see that there was funding. That was a big deal because Republicans wanted to put $0. But then she was somewhat crestfallen to see that the dollars that were there, according to her read on it, are there for 1 year and not the full 2 year budget cycle. And that is a level of the lack of stability is going to mean that some providers are just going to say, I can't keep riding this roller coaster. I got to go. And it is going to make, I think, some other Democrats wonder if this is something they can support if there isn't enough assistance for child care in this budget.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I think the governor has really been out front on talking about child care as a major issue in this budget. I think it was last week or week before that he said he would not sign a budget without some level of child care funding. I think because of the nature of compromise, the nature of divided government, we weren't probably going to get to the, what was it, about $450 million, something in the ballpark there for child care funding that the governor initially proposed. I think the total number here, as outlined by the governor in this press release, says the state budget will invest over $330 million in the child care industry, but including $110 million in those direct payments. And I think beyond that, there are some specific programs, some assistance, subsidies and certain things like that. And we will have to, dig into the details. This is all pretty fresh here. But as far as that comparing to just the child care accounts program, I think this is not quite going to be there. But again, I don't think Republicans were coming to the table with really anything on child care funding until they had to bring the Senate Democrats into the negotiations here. So, you know, I guess nature of compromise, right? You're not going to get everything you want, but this is a whole lot better than what the state has ever put forward for child care in the past.
Yes, for child care and also for special education. Again, it's not nearly the special education reimbursement rate that voucher schools get, but you're now moving that needle to 42% reimbursement in the first year, 45% reimbursement in the second year. All told, $500 million of an increase in funding for K-12 special education programs. State employees, including those in the UW system, would get a 3% raise this year and a 2% raise next year. And there was all of this investment spelled out for the UW system, including what seems a little surprising to me, but there was a lot of enumeration, as they call it here, listing specific building projects at UWM, at UW-La Crosse, at UW-Stevens Point, and others. It almost felt like, Dan, they were like, look, let's just do as much as we possibly can while we have some agreement on this, because I don't see them getting back together anytime soon. It's going to be this or hit the bricks.
Yeah, and a lot of it, too, like what you said with the UW system, a lot of it is capital projects. So a lot of it is some one-time expenditures for some of those building projects you mentioned. So it's not necessarily the type of thing that Republicans would really balk at, which would be some sort of long-term long-term investment. Ugh, what a horrible thing that would be in the UW system. A lot of those, you know, it's kind of one-time capital projects and things like that. And I think that, kind of makes it a little bit more palatable to Republicans being able to pass this, because they wanted to make cuts to the UW system. And I think the way Governor Evers characterized it is in his press release announcing this deal, was called it stabilizing the UW system. So I don't think he, went as far as to say this is, some sort of long-term investment, but stabilization of the system is the way the governor characterized it.
We're talking to Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area, Civic Media political editor. Get his news at therecombobulationarea.news on Facebook from our friend Chris Hambuck Boyle. We need some sufficient, like the voucher schools. Some certain gives us what is left, and we will not hit those reimbursement numbers. From Alicia, just from what I've learned so far, I think I would vote for this budget, even though it still shortchanges our schools and child care. There's also the part of the deal that one of the many things that Governor Evers proposed and Republicans took out, but now it's back in, and that is getting rid of the sales tax on household utility bills. That's going to lower out-of-pocket costs for to the tune of about $178 million over the next 2 years for Wisconsin households. This is like a page out of the Joe Biden playbook of, instead of these sweeping, grandiose things, find all these little ways that the middle class is getting nickeled and dimed and crow about taking care of some of those nickels and dimes.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I think there's going to be a number of things like that. I think there's some transportation-related funding throughout this bill that, again, to make a Joe Biden comparison, investing in infrastructure is always a good thing in Wisconsin too. So I think there are, I'm searching for the number here, but several hundred million going towards some transportation projects and infrastructure projects as well.
Yeah, and we're still waiting to see details on that. All right, last thing in our final minute here is where it goes from here. Joint Finance will take it up today. And then I don't know if I've even seen if it goes Assembly first, then Senate, or Senate Assembly. But do we feel like they're actually going to bang it all out this week?
This could all happen very quickly over the next 72 hours or so here. I think they, the Joint Finance Committee, that we saw it get delayed and delayed and delayed over so many times in the process over the past few weeks. It wouldn't shock me to see more delays. But I think they want to act quickly on this. They want to get it done before the 4th of July weekend, so everybody serving in the legislature can go shoot off some fireworks and enjoy some summer travel or whatever it might be.
Unlike Congress, they are definitely meeting their July 4th deadline. Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area, Civic Media's political editor, thank you very, very much. Have a great day, Dan.
Thanks for having me.
All right. A local update is coming next for some of you. Others will come back here, and I will talk to State Senator Jeff Smith from Eau Claire County and get his take on this bipartisan budget deal. Remember, you can follow my team at Up North News all day long, all through our newsletters, social media, and of course, Up North News, WI.com, and here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin has summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Ashley, a certified radio digital executive. With decades of experience working with small businesses and owning my own, does digital marketing make you feel overwhelmed? Sometimes there are so many choices and packages to choose from. You could just sign up for everything and the kitchen sink. But there's a better way. Call me at 715-496-0710, and I can build the perfect package for your business.
Join the Wisconsin Rapids Raptors and Skyward as they partner to recognize an unsung hero in our local school district. This year's unsung hero is Custodian Doug from Lincoln High School. The Raptors will be giving away Custodian Roscoe bobbleheads to the first 750 guests through the gates. All of this will take place just prior to the second game of the doubleheader on Wednesday, July 9th, game time, 6:35 p.m. Take yourself out to the ballgame at historic Winterfield in Wisconsin Rapids for Raptors baseball and Skyward Technologies, and help us to celebrate Custodian Doug.
There was a time when barbecue was perfect. A strong, reliable flavor that could be counted on. But then big manufacturers decided that barbecue needed to be zesty or spicy or sweeter or whatever. If you miss the good old days of great tasting barbecue, we'd like to introduce you to Grandpa's Barbecue. Made in small batches from Grandpa's original recipe. Buy yours online today at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
My name is DeMar Hamlin. I play for the Buffalo Bills, and I play safety. CPR saved my life. I've teamed up with the American Heart Association as a national ambassador to help create a nation of lifesavers, turning bystanders into lifesavers through CPR education and access to AEDs. Nearly 3 out of 4 cardiac arrests that don't happen in hospitals happen in homes. Join me to ensure everyone has the chance to live longer, healthier lives. Visit heart.org/nation.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Madam Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway from the fabulous city of Madison.
A lot of people say, I don't like politics. It's all dirty and angry and blah, blah, blah. It's really about caring about your community, finding a way to like bring it back to people talking to each other.
Yeah.
About what is important in our place and how do we take care of each other and use the levers of government to do that. That's really what it's about.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m. Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. And now for something local from WFHR and WIRI Studios.
Drugs, cosmetics, and medical devices. The 1960 amendments prescribe the factors that FDA must consider in determining whether a proposed use of a color additive is safe, as well as the specific conditions for safe use that must be included in listing regulations. The 1960 amendments also contained a quote-unquote Delancey clause that prohibited the listing of color additives shown to be carcinogen. The clause states that, quote, a color additive can be deemed unsafe if the additive is found to induce cancer when ingested by man or animal, or after a few relevant exposures of man or animal to such additive. After 1960, FDA gradually removed color additives from the provisional list, either by permanently listing or by terminating them from the list. Today, about half of the 1960 color additives remain listed. Only color additives additive lakes remain provisionally listed, and initiatives are underway to permanently list them.
Okay. Wow.
Hopefully they get those going soon.
Yeah, right.
It's just staggering to kind of think about sometimes.
Yes.
It is. And
how long it's taken, yeah.
The fact that car toll is no longer the primary source, and now all of these others are, the steps are being made. So more and more additives are coming out, which is great. And there are natural ways to color foods.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen that difference between breakfast cereals in the U.S. as to how they're done in the U.K. or in Europe.
Or in Europe, yeah.
And so the emphasis and activists are really trying to really make that a regulatory. Let's make our regulations as stiff as they are in Europe.
Well, and this is, and forgive me, but this is another reminder of why we don't run politics. We don't run our country like a business.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah.
This is what happens when
point.
You run business like a business.
They
care about is profit, and they don't care about people, and they don't mind hurting people. Can't do it.
Yeah, and it's daunting to think about how these artificial food dyes are affecting us and what they're doing to our food and to our health. But there is a bit of hope on the horizon. On April 22nd this year, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and FDA announced a series of new measures to phase out petroleum-based synthetic dyes from the nation's food supply. In line with this priority, on May 9th, FDA announced it was granting three new color additive petitions that will expand the palette of available colors from natural sources for manufacturers to safely use in food. So some of the major brands are taking notice and making efforts to make this happen. According to an article on CNN.com, food giant Kraft Heinz will remove all artificial colors from its brands as synthetic food dyes face renewed scrutiny from consumers and Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. The maker of Kraft Mac and Cheese, Heinz Ketchup, Jell-O, Capri Sun, and other brands announced on June 17th that it will remove synthetic food colorings from all of its foods sold in the United States by the end of 2027.
Wow.
The company also said it will not release any new U.S. foods with artificial food dyes. General Mills, the maker of cereals such as Cheerios, Trix, and Cinnamon Toast Crunch, as well as other brands like Nature Valley, Pillsbury, and Yoplait, soon followed suit. It announced later that same day that it planned to remove certified colors from all of its U.S. cereals and K-12 school foods by summer 2026, and out of all of its products by 2027. The Minneapolis-based company said in a statement that 85% of its retail products are already made without those artificial colors.
I remember General Mills doing that several years ago. They had announced that they were taking all the artificial dyes out of all of their breakfast cereals and stuff. Mm-hmm. So they've been actually doing it for a while.
Well, and I remember, too, because of the huge outcry from children when they all united and said, oh, wait a minute, no, that's right.
No, nobody, they didn't
nobody,
do that.
Nobody noticed. Nobody noticed.
No one really cared, yeah. Oh, wow, our cereal looks basically the same, right? Yeah.
Well, and it started for Kraft with the mac and cheese because they were using food dyes here, but they weren't over in Europe.
Right.
And there are some health effects. Now, no study has been exactly conclusive or done specifically on food dyes, but some of the artificial dyes have been linked to a number of possible health concerns, including allergies, cancer, inflammation of the colon and colorectal health problems, DNA damage, and behavioral changes.
Right.
I mean, DNA damage.
I mean, isn't that scary?
Yeah. Well, and they have been able to link that it doesn't necessarily cause ADHD, but food coloring, specific red dye colorings, can make kids with ADHD even more hyperactive.
Yep.
So it becomes harder, and it doesn't necessarily take effect right away. It can take 1 to 2 days before it affects. So if you give somebody, an ADHD child, candy with a red dye in it, I think it's red dye number 5, today, Wednesday, they could still be feeling the effects of that.
Right, right.
And we don't think about the fact that it stays in our bodies and in our systems that long.
Right. Well, I mean, in the end, the bottom line is that it makes more sense just to use the more natural food coloring because there's really no need, maybe other than cost cutting, to do the synthetic ones anymore. I think there's enough out there that we've got that it's more smart, you know, it makes us a little bit smarter on how we do these kinds of things. And it just makes sense to me.
It is the asbestos of the food world.
Yeah.
It's really, you know, it was under at a time it had its place. we
don't need it anymore.
Yeah.
And there are so many good natural healthy sources out there that you can use to make foods more appealing.
Right.
And you can hear our enthusiasm about going in that direction to keep us as healthy as possible. And we would like to have our enthusiasm to promote your business as a sponsor of The Kitchen's Open. And never has that been or ever will be synthetic.
It's all natural.
As a sponsor, we will highlight your business during the segment and in our newsletter. We could also share an interview with you or broadcast live from your business.
For more information about these opportunities, just give us a call at 715-424-1300 and speak with Pam. She'll put you in touch with Ashley to work out all the details.
That number again, line.
Thank
you. Oh, there we go. 715-424-1300.
And with that, we'll close the kitchen.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was interesting. I learned a lot on that one.
Yeah,
wow.
Me too. Yeah.
Very cool.
It's a really good one. Appreciate that, Beth.
Yeah.
We are going to make Beth stick around a little bit longer.
A little more
She's
going to
hang out with us for our next segment. When we come back, we're talking about phrases that we like, 20 old school sayings we still love and what they actually mean. We'll be coming back with that on The Morning Show at WF. HR.
Tell me something good.
You were listening to the Rapids Report, sponsored by Crockett Septic. To hear the full interview, visit WFHR.com, the Civic Media app, or wherever you get your podcast.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE, Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. President Trump is cheering on Republicans in the Senate, where lawmakers have been debating and amending what the president calls his big, beautiful spending bill for 2 days straight.
This is the biggest tax cut in history. Everything is the biggest in history. It's the best bill we've ever had.
Victims' families say accused killer Brian Koberger will plead guilty to murdering 4 University of Idaho college students to spare himself the death penalty. CBS's Jonathan Vigliotti.
There are a few legal steps left. In the state of Idaho, a judge does have the authority to reject a plea deal, but it is considered incredibly rare.
The jury's resumed deliberations at Sean Combs' sex trafficking trial in New York, a day after they sent the judge a note about one person on their panel, CBS's Alice Gaynor.
They said they were concerned that this juror cannot follow your honor's instructions. Can you speak with him?
CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.